It's a complex project, but the idea is that we would have multiple entities operating under one facility.
Hi, everybody. This is Brad with the United Way of Columbia and Greene Counties. You are listening to WGXC ACRA, Columbia and Greene Counties, 90.7 on the dial.
Do you have 17 cents a day to support a platform for many diverse voices to have their say on the local airwaves? Just 17 cents a day, a monthly $5 recurring donation, can help keep local youth on the air at WGXC 90.7 FM. Your monthly sustaining support will keep the airwaves full of music from around the world and around the corner. WGXC needs 500 sustaining supporters to make sure there is one spot on the dial where the community can have access to its own airwaves. Make your pledge today at wgxc.org/donate and do your part to protect an important source of local news, information, and entertainment. With just 17 cents a day, you will do your part to protect your favorite frequency. Become a sustaining supporter today. Go to wgxc.org/donate now.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Mid-Hudson Cable, serving Columbia, Greene, and Southern Albany counties with digital cable, high-speed internet, and cable phone services for homes and businesses since 1971. Mid-Hudson Cable. All the right connections on the web at mhcable.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Seth Lane of Brooklyn, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio Daily News. I'm Philip Graham. James Allen reports in the Albany Times-Union that Isabella Malazzo, a sophomore making her debut, pitched a perfect game and struck out 12 April 4th. It was also the 300th career win for Coach Tracy Natransky as Ichabod Crane's softball team bested Holy Names 20-0 in a game shortened to 5 innings because of the mercy rule. Malazzo said, and I quote, "That was great. On JV, it was pretty easy to get past everybody. I felt coming up to varsity, it would be a lot harder to throw the ball by people and get my ball to spin in a way where they can't hit it," end quote. Coach Natransky tried to spread the credit around for her 300 wins. Natransky said, and I quote, "It's a culmination of everybody being in the program. It has been a long time. Obviously, I have been here for a while. We've had good JV coaches. We've had great assistant coaches. The kids put the time in. We've built the program from the ground up. Everybody in the community is invested in what we have here. That we're striving for a certain level, we want to keep it that way for a long time," end quote. Read the full story in the Albany Times-Union. Chris McKenna is reporting at The Fray that Farm Workers' Fair Labor Practices Act, a bill that has been discussed for years but not voted on in Albany, might now get a vote. Republicans no longer control the state Senate, and now there are public hearings in 3 locations around New York planned this spring. State Senator Jen Metzger said in a press release on March 29, and I quote, "It's very important that we hear from farmers and farm workers as we weigh this legislation and make sure that we are addressing concerns and needs of all of those who will be affected. We must take into careful consideration the realities of small and family-owned farm operations, the vast majority of farms in New York, and the long-term viability of agriculture in this state," end quote. The bill would allow farm workers to unionize, require overtime pay after 8 hours of work per day or 40 hours a week, and also offer unemployment insurance and workers' compensation. Farm owners have been against the bill. The New York Farm Bureau supports a required day of rest for farm workers, but said overtime pay would be, and I quote, a difficult financial burden to bear, end quote. Bureau President David Fisher said, and I quote, farms compete in the marketplace and can't just pass along price increases to recoup their losses, especially in this difficult farm economy. The farm labor legislation, as written, will force farms out of business, hurting the very workers the legislation is looking to assist, end quote. Read the full story at the Fray. William J. Kimball reports in the Daily Freeman that Saugerties officials are asking the State Department of Transportation for a full traffic light at the intersection of State Route 32 and a Thruway's Exit 20 southbound toll plaza. Next year, the state will remove the toll plaza for a cashless tolling system, and Saugerties officials are concerned about vehicles speeding off the interstate into that intersection. Saugerties Town Supervisor Fred Costello said, and I quote, "We feel strongly that when that toll plaza is removed, that the risk for accidents will go up," end quote. Currently, the intersection has a flashing light that blinks yellow at drivers on Route 32 and red at drivers exiting the toll booth. Department of Transportation spokesperson Heather Pillsworth said the department, and I quote, "will initiate a study to reevaluate the intersection at State Route 32 and the New York State Thruway South exit," end quote. The State Thruway Authority declined to comment. Read the full story in the Daily Freeman. Amanda Purcell reports in Columbia Green Media that a candlelight vigil was held April 2nd to remember two grandparents and their three grandchildren who died in a fire in Durham a year ago. The vigil, held at Our Lady of Knox Shrine on Route 145, celebrated Jonathan N. Mamano, 10, Jaden A. Caffrey, 8, and Sophia G. Mamano, 7, and their grandparents, Nicholas and Mary Mamano, both 68, who all died in a fire in their home at 2753 Route 145 on April 2, 2018. Kathy Ballone, the Mamano's daughter and aunt to the three children, said, and I quote, "I think we're doing the best we could be doing in such a horrible situation. The holidays were hard, but me and my brothers are closer than we've ever been," end quote. The father of three, John Mamano, was the only person to survive the blaze and suffered burns over 15% of his body. Ballone said, and I quote, "He has some ongoing health issues, but nothing too significant," end quote. Investigators never could determine the cause of the fire. Read the full story at HudsonValley360.com. And that wraps up the WGXE Hands-On Radio Daily News. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXE website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a nice weekend.
The National Weather Service in Albany predicts a mostly sunny Sunday with a high near 63 and a low around 46. Showers are predicted Monday, mainly before 2 p.m., the high near 64 and a low around 44. Tuesday, there's a 40% chance of rain, mainly after 2 p.m. Otherwise, it'll be partly sunny with a high near 60 and a low around 36. Tom Rowe for WGXC 90.7 FM, radio for open ears.
This is a red alert. Please remain calm. Every precaution will be taken for your protection. Keep your radio tuned to this place on the dial throughout the alert period for information. Telephone service to your home may be cut off to permit military and civil defense authorities to carry out vital operations. Take shelter in your basement or in your nearest shelter area. If you can plug in your radio in the basement, take it with you. Use a portable radio set if you have one. Otherwise, turn up the volume of your radio so that you can hear it in the basement. Keep calm. Don't lose your head. This station will continue to stay on the air throughout the alert period to bring you authentic information and official instructions. Refuse to listen to unauthorized rumors or broadcasts. This is your official broadcast.
In accordance with the authority vested in me, I hereby declare a emergency to exist.
Welcome, radio listeners. You're listening to Bound by Books Youth Radio on WGXE 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, and Hudson, listener-supported radio for open ears. I'm Emily. I'm the director of the Hudson Area Library, and I'm from Hudson.
I'm Amelia. I'm a student at Hudson High School, and I'm also from Hudson.
And we're here every week talking about books.
Books we love, books we hate.
Other bookish things.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly books we love.
Yeah.
Hooray. And we're going to do that today. Well, I think you're talking about a book you love. Sounds like you're enjoying it.
Unless I'm extensively ranting about Old Man and the Sea, I am usually talking about books I love.
Yes.
Well, I've been, like, jumping around books. I've been reading Wings of Fire, and I've been reading stuff in school, and I've also read a few things out of a book my dad was reading. I believe it's called Lore or something similar, but I can't remember exactly what it's called. But it's basically, it's kind of like The Scary States of America that I talked about a while ago, where they take a bunch of different, based on true stories, urban legends and stuff, and put it into an anthology. And this one is more adult geared, like Scary States of America was more geared towards tweens and children. This one is more geared towards adults. Like, there's the story of Annabelle in there, like the original doll, which was Raggedy Ann doll. There is
creepy.
Raggedy Ann dolls are scary. My mom had some, I think, and she doesn't think they're scary, but I think they're terrifying. There's other creepy doll stuff in there. There's stuff about the Wendigo in there, and it's all very, very cool. Oh, there it is. It is called The World of Lore: Monstrous Creatures by Aaron Mankey. That has a very cool cover, too.
So have you read some of the stories?
Yeah.
And do you have any favorites?
I've jumped around. My favorite so far is the one about Annabelle, but I'm also a pretty good big fan of some of the other doll ones.
Do you have any creepy dolls in your life?
I have this doll that I don't really consider creepy until someone points it out to me. I bought it at a thrift shop, and it's a doll of a Japanese woman in a kimono, and it's on a stand, so it's not like a play with doll. It's a it's more of a figurine, but I put it on my nightstand and I never noticed it until someone actually points it out. And then there's another one that's made of like real seal fur that I have to keep in a drawer because my mom's allergic to it, and my mom actually thinks it's creepy, but I think it's cute. It's a little Eskimo doll.
I tried not to judge a book by its cover. Not the book in this case, but like scary dolls.
Yeah.
Because, you know, deep down inside, they might not be evil or creepy. They might just be very nice dolls with creepy faces.
I think Cabbage Patch dolls are pretty scary, too.
It's true. My niece has a stuffed animal fox that was a hand-me-down from her aunt on her other side that my nephew says is very creepy. And I can see why he thinks it looks creepy, because it's a little raggedy because it's like an older doll. And it's this red, bright red fox with, like, really squinty, like, eyes that maybe are, like, angled a little bit. So they look like they're, you know, like how you get the
mean. They're glaring at you, yeah.
The mean eyebrows. It's kind of like an illusion of mean eyebrows.
Oh.
But I actually think it looks like a nice fox.
Aw.
I don't think my niece would be friends with a mean fox. So that's my vote. Do you think you're going to read more stories?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
My dad tried to get into the story book I brought in a couple days ago, days, a couple weeks ago, months probably. It was a while ago when I read this, about the weird and sometimes scary stories based off Mother Goose rhymes.
Mm-hmm.
And he did not like it very much, which is why I told him he should jump around, because there are some really bad and really good ones in there, mm-hmm. but he kind of gave up on it.
Oh, well, not every book is for every person.
Yeah.
So I'm glad you liked it. So the book I wanted to talk about is The Unwanted Stories of the Syrian Refugees. It's written and illustrated by Don Brown, and it's an informational graphic novel about the war in Syria, and specifically about the situation of Syrian refugees around the world, as well as a little bit about people left behind, but it's primarily focused on the refugees. And I thought it was a really effective way of kind of getting an introduction to what's going on in Syria, why there's a situation where there's millions of people that are displaced and fleeing for their lives. Of course, it's complicated.
Yeah.
But I think that he did a good job of making sense of that complication and being okay with the fact that it's complicated. It's not just simple.
Yeah.
And I think the images are very effective and moving. My only critique of this graphic novel is that they use a standard font or typeface in the book.
Oh, and
like as a graphic novel reader, I'm used to it being like a handwritten text. And that just really threw me off. But it does make it easy to read because it's a very legible typeface. But yeah, I think it's meant for teens and adults, I would say. I think younger readers that are mature enough or whose family feels comfortable sharing some of this like war and devastation and trauma with them would be fine to read it as well. But you know, there is a lot of people have died and a lot of people have harmed other people, and it also addresses some of the bias against refugees. You know, there's so many refugees, and when that many people come to a new place, it can cause some tension around resources, fear of the other. So you do see some of that.
It's very interesting that it's like this so informational and serious, but it's like a graphic novel, so it's still kind of very fun or like interesting to read, see the images and all that.
Yeah, it's interesting to see how they portray certain events or people. And I think it helps make it kind of come to life, so it's you're not just reading words and trying to imagine, but
yeah,
you're actually seeing people, you know, obviously drawings of people going through some of these things. But they also use images and words to sort of break down some of the facts for you in interesting ways, like to try to get a sense of the numbers of people that have been displaced and are now finding their homes in different places of the world. They have some charts.
Like, they drew like graphs and charts and stuff. That's really cool.
Yeah, so they have one part where it says, before the civil war, the population of Syria is about 22 million people, a bit bigger than Florida's. So they have a picture of the shape of the country of Syria and then Florida. The flood of refugees reduces the population to about 17 million. The 5.5 million refugees are about equal to the population of Denmark.
Oh.
It also, there's a chart where they show the monthly applications for asylum. So in December 2011, about 800 people applied for asylum in Europe. In December 2014, nearly 15,000 people applied for asylum in Europe. In Syria, about 191,000 people are killed by 2014. Among the dead are at least 8,800 children and young people under 18. So it's a very sad story, obviously, and it's a story that's continuing in our world. But I think it's important to know about what's going on in the world, and including, you know, this is also, there are refugees that come to the United States. Not many, because we've capped the number that are allowed in, as have some other countries. And some countries are starting to put up walls and fences to keep people out that need help. And so they explore that too, how like certain countries, once more and more people started coming, they started putting caps on the number of people that could come in.
When was this book published or written? Or
I think it was published last year. Let me double check that. But I know it won an award at the recent Youth Media Awards, which usually is for books published in 2018. Yeah. Yeah, so it was published in 2018. Oh, and there's a poem at the end.
Oh.
And since it's National Poetry Month, I could share that.
Yeah.
So this is Hope Behind the Shadow of Pain by Sahir Noah. I will draw my dreams on the wall of hope, a hope of finding home, hope of going to school, hope of holding my parents' hands and walking through the darkness without feeling scared. It seems hard, but from the heart of disaster, I will be waiting for somehow everything to come to an end and see the light behind the darkness and remember always when life gives you all reasons to give up, don't. Don't let the stumbles on the round stop the journey. Stay strong and think of that word, which they call hope.
Hmm.
So that's accompanied by an illustration called Hope by Salam Noah, which is of a young child writing the word hope on a tent, which I assume is meant to be a refugee tent.
Oh, that's really nice.
So not the most pleasant book to read, but an important book, and I think a very well-written and produced book.
Yeah.
That gives a lot of information in a very accessible way.
Mm-hmm. That's cool.
So that was my sad read among many happy picture books. Although I also read two picture books this past week that made me cry.
Oh, what picture books were those?
One was called Grandma's Visit, and it's about a young girl's relationship with her grandmother and learning about her grandmother's childhood and her culture. And then Grandma passes on, and in their Chinese culture, they believe when somebody dies that you turn on all the lights in the house so that the spirit of your deceased loved one can find their way home for the last visit.
Oh.
So it's a mix of Grandma's visit, you know, daily visits with her granddaughter, and then Grandma's final visit. And then I forget what the other one was that made me cry. But I read that one, and then I read some light, happy ones, and then I read another one that made me cry. And I was like, why? Children's picture books, they get me.
I don't remember what the picture book my mom has is, but he comes to the book festival, I think, last year and almost every year now, called, like, God Needed a Puppy, and I don't know who it's by, but all I know is that I look at the cover of that thing for too long, and I start crying. I once tried to read the first page, and I started crying, and so it just stays out of sight for me.
Yeah, I think it's John Gray. Does that sound
right? Yes, that's who it is.
And he has a new one called Keller's Heart.
Yeah.
And I believe he's coming to the book festival this year.
Yeah,
as well.
I think he is. I'm pretty sure he is, because my mom's talking about looking forward to seeing him again.
Oh, great. Save the day for the book fest, everyone.
Yeah.
Saturday, May 4th at the Hudson Junior Senior High School.
We love the book fest.
It's a pretty awesome event, especially for book lovers like us. But other people love it, too.
Yeah.
Even if they don't identify as an avid reader. It's so fun to get to meet an author, and the Hudson Literacy Fund makes it possible for all the students to be able to get a free book, which is great. So if you go to the Hudson City School District, if you're a student there,
you can get a free
book. You can get a free book signed by an author or illustrator at the book festival.
Yeah.
And I think they also have other free books often there. And it's free comic book day, and usually the school has that as well. So you can get some comics. It's a pretty awesome event. And it's free to attend. So
yeah,
that's great. Well, we want to share some books that are coming out that you might be interested in, and maybe we would too. So let's see. I'll start with a historic fiction novel that I think is written in verse. I might be wrong on that. So, you know, if you get this book and it's not written in verse, don't be mad at me. But I'm pretty sure I read that in a review somewhere. So it's called White Rose by Kip Wilson. And it's based on a true story. So it's historical fiction, but it is actually based on a true story. A gorgeous and timely novel based on the incredible story of Sophie Scholl, a young German college student who challenged the Nazi regime during World War II as part of the White Rose, a nonviolent resistance group. Disillusioned by the propaganda of Nazi Germany, Sophie Scholl, her brother, and his fellow soldiers formed the White Rose, a group that wrote and distributed anonymous letters criticizing the Nazi regime and calling for action from their fellow German citizens. The following year, Sophie and her brother were arrested for treason and interrogated for information about their collaborators. So this book is sort of a fictionalized
historical
version of the story.
Yeah.
So it's imagining like some things, but, you know, it's based in fact and true stories.
Yes.
And I've seen a movie about Sophie Scholl and the White Rose that was very moving.
Ooh.
So this is definitely one I'm going to pick up, check out. And I'll let you know if it's truly a verse novel, because the description I had here does not say that, but I'm pretty sure I read that in a review. I like a good verse novel. So what have you got?
So what I have here is We Rule the Night by Claire Eliza Bartlett. The description here says, two girls use forbidden magic to fly and fight for their country and for themselves in this riveting debut that's part Shadow and Bone, part codenamed Verity. 17-year-old Revna is a factory worker manufacturing war machines for the Union of the North. When she's caught using illegal magic, she fears being branded a traitor and imprisoned. Meanwhile, on the front lines, Lynn defied her father, a Union general, and disguised herself as a boy to join the army. They're both offered a reprieve from punishment if they use their magic in a special women's military fight unit and undertake terrifying, deadly missions under cover of darkness. Revna and Lynn can hardly stand to be in the same cockpit, but if they can't fly together, and if they can't find a way to fly well, the enemy's superior firepower will destroy them if they don't destroy each other first. We Rule the Night is a powerful story about sacrifice, complicated friendships, and survival despite impossible odds. I love magic.
It's interesting, the two books that they compare it to are Shadow and Bone by Leigh Bardugo, who I haven't read Shadow and Bone, but I've read Six of Crows, which is by them.
That's one of our book battle things this year. Mm-hmm.
And it has a little bit of magic in it and adventure. And then Codename Verity is a historical fiction novel that's got some espionage and some female pilots. So it's interesting, those connecting together.
Yeah.
That story. Again, I have one more to share. It is called Forward Me Back to You by Mitali Perkins.
Ooh.
Katina King is the reigning teen jiu-jitsu champion of Northern California, but she's having trouble fighting off the secrets in her past. Robin Thornton was adopted from an orphanage in Kolkata, India, and is reluctant to take on his future. Since he knows nothing about his past, how is he supposed to figure out what comes next? Robin and Kat meet in the most unlikely of places, a summer service trip to India to work with survivors of human trafficking. As bonds blossom between the travel mates, Robin and Kat discover the healing superpowers of friendship. At turns heart-wrenching and beautiful and buoyant, Mitali Perkins' new novel explores the ripple effects of violence across borders and generations, and how small acts of heroism can break the cycle.
Ooh.
Sounds like a good read.
It does.
I like Mitali Perkins. Mm-hmm. Okay. So those are just three recent releases that sound very good.
Yeah.
So if those sound good to you, check them out.
Mm-hmm.
And if you read them and you like them, let us know.
Yeah.
So we're going to break for a little bit of music. And then for those listening on Sunday, we'll be back shortly to talk a little bit more. And for those listening Friday, this is it for us for today. But we hope you have a great week. Lots of quality reading time.
Bye.
Happy reading.